welcome back to another edition of the Dog and Duck Show. My name is Warren Manhart. I am the dog. With me, as always, is my co-host, Mark Schmoor. He is the duck. And both teams come out of the weekend with a W. The dogs looking forward to a much-awaited bye. The ducks are looking ahead to a few potential wins and then preparing for the dogs. But before we get into all that, how are you doing, my friend?
Warren, it was just a Saturday of joy from start to finish, from 6 a.m. when I turned on College Game Day till midnight when I finished rewatching the Oregon game. And I'm still living off that high. 5 days later, I'm just immersed in the positive fumes of Saturday's thrilling win for the Oregon Ducks. So I am excited to be here with you.
Well, let's talk about that. We'll talk about the Ducks win at UCLA, talk about the Dogs win at home against UCLA. We'll talk about the Dogs win on the road against Cal, and then we can look ahead and talk about what Oregon's going to be preparing for this weekend, and maybe what the Dogs are going to be looking at heading into the bye week. So Ducks, you know, win a very impressive showdown against undefeated UCLA, 45-30. Mark, what did you see in this game?
Well, gosh, there's lots of places one could begin, Warren, but I think the place that I'd like to begin is there was a key stretch in the second quarter where up to this point, the teams had kind of been trading possessions. It was 10-10. And Oregon, Bo Nix, who played a phenomenal game, probably the best game of his career to this point, he threw a perfect 50-yard bomb to Troy Franklin, hit him perfectly in stride just as he was entering the end zone. Ducks take a 17-10 lead, and then they come out and run the surprise onside kick, which gave them another possession. And then they score off of that. And all of a sudden, a tie game is now a 2-touchdown game. And it felt like from that point on, UCLA never seriously threatened again. And that call to run an onside kick, immediately every Oregon fan was saying, Dan Lanning just pulled a Chip Kelly. Like, that's what was so incredible about that moment is I actually remember Chip doing that in a similarly, you know, anticipated matchup with Stanford when it was Andrew Luck and Jim Harbaugh and you know, this highly powered Stanford team. And Oregon needed to figure out a way to steal a possession, and they ran a surprise onside kick, got the ball back, scored again, and totally changed the momentum of the game. Dan Lanning pulled a Chip Kelly on a Chip Kelly team. And it really completely changed the texture of the game from that point forward. And I think is one of those things that is just going to kind of be forever remembered in Duck lore, like the way that we remember Dennis Dixon faking a Statue of Liberty and scoring against Michigan. It's just kind of one of those things of you know, Duck fans are going to be able to remember, oh, you remember that onside kick that Lanning called against Chip. And that was just a window into what kind of the thrill of this game was, which was seeing Oregon check all of the boxes, play all of the right notes, and beat a really good UCLA team in a really satisfying way.
Absolutely. And I can't emphasize enough, I think this is a really good UCLA team. I picked them to win last weekend on the show. I wasn't surprised that Oregon won at home against UCLA, especially, like you said, with Bo Nix perhaps playing the best game of his career. You know, if he had had an off game, you know, maybe UCLA comes out with the W. But with him firing on all cylinders, with everything else working in their favor, onsides, kicks, you know, special teams, great, great win. So, Mark, if my memory serves me correctly, Oregon was 6-1 last year, right? Is that correct?
Well, yeah, they were 8-1 last year to start the year. So
they started off 6-1, you know, so 6-1 this year compared to 6-1 last year. What is the difference in the way that you feel about this team compared to last year's team at 6-1?
Feels totally different. For one thing, the loss to Georgia is completely in the rearview mirror because it was the first game and there hasn't been any real hiccup since then. Whereas last year, that the lone loss came to a bad Stanford team in really agonizing fashion, and it was after they had already played their best game of the year by beating Ohio State. It felt like last year's Oregon team played their best game of the year the second week of the season, and for the rest of the regular season, you were kind of wondering, where is that team?
They're kind of chasing that high.
Yeah, and a lot of their games against kind of average opponents, they were just kind of having to gut out these close wins. You know, we're going to talk about the Cal game. Last year, the Cal game for Oregon came down to a goal line stand on fourth and goal on the last play of the game to survive that game. This year's team feels like they are getting demonstrably better every single week. And this was the best game they have played offensively, I think, because of the caliber of opponent. I think it was also the best game they've played defensively because of the caliber of opponent. And some of the issues that we've seen them have, getting off the field on third down or slowing down a really good passing game, those have been real question marks for this Oregon defense. And they answered that challenge this week in a really impressive fashion. And so I think there's an excitement amongst the Oregon fan base for this year's team that there wasn't there last year, just because there's a thought of, what if this team keeps getting better? Whereas last year it was kind of, why can this team not become the team that we saw in week two?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, we talked about this off the air, but it does feel like right now Oregon is this snowball that has been gaining speed, gaining size, gaining momentum. And they feel pretty unstoppable right now. Do you think that they could, you know, run the table from here on out?
I think every game from here on out is a winnable game. And I think that the team is playing at a really high level. Like, my favorite stat from the UCLA game, Warren, was that there was a point in the fourth quarter when UCLA hadn't punted and they hadn't turned the ball over, and they were trailing 45-23. Now think about that. How hard is that? You haven't punted, you haven't turned the ball over, and you're trailing by three touchdowns. And that's how it kind of felt, where it was like, UCLA is not necessarily doing anything wrong. It's just Oregon is doing everything right. And so when you see a team kind of put together that kind of a game, it's hard not to at least kind of, yeah, you look down the schedule and you're like, I like our chances. At the same time, here's what I can tell you. One Oregon team in the history of Oregon has gone undefeated through conference play. That was the 2010 team, Chip Kelly's second season. And there have been, I counted up since the 94 Rose Bowl team on, there have been 9 different Oregon teams that have had a single loss in conference play. So a lot of really good teams, and it's been in every era. There was the Rich Brooks team, there were the Bilotti teams with Harrington, it was the Chip Kelly era and the Helfrich era with Mariota and Mario Cristobal's team with Justin Herbert. Like, Oregon has had all of these different special teams, special quarterbacks late in the year kind of making a run for a playoff spot or a national championship berth or a Rose Bowl or whatever it is, and then they have a hiccup, and oftentimes that hiccup is, you know, on the road to some unranked opponent or at home to a really good opponent in the biggest game of the year or whatever it is. And so as much as I would love to say, yes, I think Oregon's going to run the table, I would say history tells me that we're probably due for a heartbreak at some point. Like, and it's probably going to come in that stretch of like Washington, Utah, Oregon State, where those are what, 3 of the top 5 teams in the Pac-12 this year. And right. So 3 of the top 6. And so it's going to come, you know, it's going to come somewhere in there, one would think. But I'm going to go into every game thinking it's not going to come today. Like, you know, that's the way. Yeah. Like, I mean, how can you not, with the way this team is playing, how can you not just talk yourself into them winning the next game?
Absolutely. So, Mark, any other takeaways from this UCLA game that you think is going to kind of influence the way this team, you know, performs moving forward?
I think one takeaway that I would have, this was maybe the most encouraging sign to me in kind of putting this team in the context of like the history of Oregon. If you think about Oregon in the Chip Kelly era, these dominant teams that really beat teams with speed and with scheme, and sometimes when they needed to rely on physicality, it wasn't there to the same degree. There was a point in the second half of this game against UCLA when Oregon basically just needed to kill the clock and pad the lead and keep UCLA from going on a run. And first they had an 88-yard drive right before the half that was very methodical. Then they come out after the half, they force a field goal, and then they go 15 plays, 82 yards. They ran the ball almost every down. They converted multiple fourth downs on the ground. And it was just kind of this, like, it felt like watching like Wisconsin or somebody, you know, where you're watching one of those teams that really just kind of has this identity as like a power running team, where it was the offensive line asserting their will. It was like they'd line up two running backs behind Nix and one of them would throw a block for the other one running through the hole. I mean, it was just this physical, hard-natured style. And that's this style that Mario Cristobal always kind of talked about bringing about at Oregon, but I don't think we ever really saw it fully, you know, reach its potential under his coaching. And this was the most most significant, I think, that we have seen that at Oregon in quite some time, was just an imposing of their will upon the game. That was really encouraging to see, because so much of the other kind of theatrics with this team have been this creative play calling from Kenny Dillingham and Bo Nix hitting receivers, like, you know, hitting Franklin in stride 50 yards down the field. You know, it's been kind of this high octane offense, and to see them get in a place where they're like, we're just going to run the ball down their throat and we're not going to be especially creative about it. We're just going to do it, even when they know it's coming. That was really satisfying to see.
They were running the damn ball, it sounds like.
Yes.
Well, the Ducks are in the driver's seat. They're number one in the conference now. The only undefeated team left in the conference in terms of conference play. The Huskies, however, are still digging out of a hole, starting off their you know, conference play 1-2. But come away with their first road win of the season against Cal, 28-21. Doesn't sound that impressive, but for most Husky fans, any win against Cal on the road over the last few years just is a massive sigh of relief. Yeah. We've had some doozies of games, and when I say doozy, I don't mean it in a good way, but just in the, wow, that was terrible to watch. And it was just a good solid game. Huskies are now 6-2, which makes them bowl eligible, the first time that they'll be bowl eligible since 2019, which was Chris Peterson's last season as the head coach. 6-2 for the first time since 2018. And Michael Penix continues to lead the way, putting up 374 yards, throwing for two touchdowns, and gets his eighth 300-yard passing game of the season. And Mark, miraculously, perhaps this is a sign of some positive improvement, or it could be just the fact that Cal is one of the worst offensive teams in the Pac-12, but they managed to hold Cal scoreless for the first half of the game, which felt like a dramatic improvement from what we've seen the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think I wonder how Washington fans, like the typical Washington fan, you know, you kind of mentioned, hey, in recent history, if we win at Cal, that's a win. Yeah. And But I also know that sometimes when your team is averaging 40 points a game or something, and they have a game like this that's close down to the wire because the offense can't really get on track, that sometimes there's some frustration. But I had a friend who's a Beaver fan, an Oregon State grad, and of course they're looking forward to playing Washington here soon. And he texts me and he says, is Washington really this bad? And I texted him back and I said, I think it's just a matchup thing with Cal. And I brought up in 2018, Cal beat Washington 12-10. In 2019, Cal beat Washington 20-19. I mean, these low scoring kind of grudge match games have really been the history of this. So I think for Washington to flip that and go down there and play one of those low scoring games, but actually still manage to put together 28 points and never really feel like, I mean, I never really felt like Cal was going to win the game, even when it was close.
No, so, and I mean, you know, it was a low scoring game, but it was a totally different type of low scoring game than some of the ones that you referenced, because the Huskies were moving the ball up and down the field. The first three drives, they get into, you know, within scoring distance and settle for two field goals, settle for a third field goal attempt, miss that. So instead of being potentially up 21-0, they're up 6-0.
Right.
Going into halftime. And then to start the second half, Penix leads three touchdown drives in a row to, you know, put them up. They convert a 2-point conversion. So those three touchdown drives put them up 28-14. And, you know, they managed to hold on long enough to get the win. But, you know, the offense was only sputtering in a few key moments when they got close to the end zone. And some of those were just a little bit random, like a drop from a normally reliable, you know, pass catching running back, you know, some really bad penalties and just some, you know, like one call that we had, you know, a touchdown was called and then it was called back because of a supposed, you know, screen block type of a call. So I think in, you know, the Coach Grubb talked about it later this week and he just said, you know, according to my understanding of the rule book, that wasn't a penalty, but you know, what the refs saw led him to make the call. So I think, you know, it could have been a very different game and that's probably true, you know, in almost every game. But in this case, it wasn't that, you know, I don't know if your buddy was actually watching the game or if he was just looking at the score. But
yeah, I don't think he was watching it closely. I think it was just seeing the score and saying what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. If you saw the team moving the ball up and down the field, you would know that they were clearly the superior team, but favor was not on their side, especially in the first half. You know, so Mark, just a few things that were encouraging for me, because there certainly are some, continue to be some glaring weaknesses on this team, but they got 5 sacks again in this game.
Yeah.
And so that actually
now for the Huskies, like they've got a good front 7 to put pressure on.
They really do. And as a result, you know, the Huskies are leading the Pac-12 in sacks now with 25 sacks for the season, which is actually places them as number 5 nationally. I think with Jeremiah Martin, Braylon Trice, and ZTF, you've got a trio of pass rushers that have really become pretty formidable over the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks of the season. But, you know, in addition to that, they're leading the Pac-12 in rushing yards per game in terms of, you know, the least amount of rushing yards per game. So what's the problem? Well, we all know what the problem is. It's these explosive pass plays that are, you know, the result of not being able to contain the wide receivers down the field or make tackles once they make catches. And so, you know, I think the encouraging part of that is, you know, that if you can fix this one thing, that there should be a dramatic improvement on this defense.
Yeah. So
going into the bye week, and we'll talk about that a little bit, but you know, can the Huskies solve the problem of giving up long pass plays over the last four games of the season? And if they do, this could be a team that surprises people and maybe goes 3-1, potentially even 4-0, but, you know, putting them in a position to really, you know, finish the season on a really high note.
Yeah, well, and I would have said going into the game, I would have said if Cal has any shot at kind of pulling the upset or making this really difficult for Washington, then they have to get a superlative game from Jaden Ott, who is their, you know, running back, who has put up some really phenomenal numbers this year. And if I'm looking at the box score here, I'm seeing that Washington held Ott to, what, 14 carries for 36 yards? I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know, to have that kind of a start, 14 carries for 38 yards, I'm sorry. I mean, that's really, really impressive work by that front seven, in addition to the pressure they're putting on the quarterback, you know, to have that kind of an impact on a game on one of the elite running backs in the conference, you know, that bodes well for them the rest of the season as well, I would think.
Yeah. And I mean, another thing that bodes well is the fact that Cam Davis is leading the Pac-12 in rushing touchdowns. So, you know, as much as the attention has been rightfully given to Michael Penix and Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan, you know, Penix continues to lead the Power Five in passing yards with just a little under 3,000 passing yards. Rome Odunze is first in the Pac-12 with 756. Jalen McMillan's third with 611. But there is a level of balance on this offense that, you know, that Cam Davis has been able to put up these rushing touchdown numbers. And he's certainly, I would never say that he's one of the top four or five backs in the Pac-12, but it's evidence that this Husky team does have the capability of running the ball, especially in the red zone, to get those key scores when needed. And I think that is going to be what it's going to take to beat an Oregon State who's got a pretty strong defense this year. And then, of course, to be able to keep Oregon on its heels. And even Washington State, they've got a good defense this year. So, you know, we don't want to be that one-dimensional Mike Leach team that got abused by the Huskies year after year. And the only way we can do that is if we have that running game to balance it out.
That's well said. Do you want to transition now and talk a little bit about the bye and kind of what your thoughts are with that as Washington's going to have some time here to work out the kinks before the home stretch?
Yeah, I think, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but like I said, the Huskies are 6-2 and, you know, both the Huskies and the, you know, the Ducks, they've got a really dynamic quarterback who is putting up some pretty historic numbers within their team and within this conference. It's really remarkable when you think about how much of a change the quarterback play in the Pac-12 has, you know, transformed over one season. But, and Michael Penix and Bo Nix are right up there at the top of the conversation. So, you know, I texted this to you the other day, but to me, it's a big if, because beating Oregon State is not going to be an easy task for the Dogs, although playing them at home on a Friday night should help. Yeah. But assuming that they do get past this Oregon State team and assuming that Michael Penix continues to do what he's done over the first eight games of the season, you know, say puts up 350, 380 yards passing and three touchdowns, he's going to be heading into this Oregon game, I would think, with a lot of confidence, potentially the Huskies back into the top 25 again. And, you know, perhaps a little bit of a dark horse for the Heisman. And then I think you've got Bo Nix, who's continuing to build his case, assuming that they win their next game, which they presumably will. They're going in 7-1. The Huskies going in 7-2. That's going to be a pretty high-profile game, not only for both teams, but for both quarterbacks.
Yeah, and of course, by talking about it in these terms and by speculating and just kind of assuming that we're going to win until then, we're both probably doing our teams a disservice. But
the jinx, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I think it. Oregon State is a real challenge, but I think you're right. Friday night at home, coming off a bye, you've got to feel like that puts the Huskies in the best possible position to kind of come out of that with a win. I think for Oregon, you don't want to underestimate a team on the road. You don't want to underestimate Cal based on the recent history, but it would seem like for Oregon, the way they're playing now, to take care of Cal in Colorado seems like a manageable request, but just based on what they've done the last 6 weeks. So if we had said at the beginning of the year, hey, when we meet November 12th, Ducks are going to be 8-1, Huskies are going to be 7-2, I think both of us would have signed up for that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so now to be kind of at the place where we're a couple weeks away and the roadmap is there, that excitement will only build if both of these teams can just kind of add victories in the meantime.
Yeah. So what do the Dogs need to do to get there? I think one thing is obviously they've got to take this week to get healthy. The defense was obliterated against Arizona State, which was clearly the black spot on the season thus far. Losing to UCLA on the road was disappointing, but not devastating. Losing to Arizona State on the road to their backup quarterback, that was shameful. And so, but at the same time, we talked about that defense was really, really thin on that particular day.
Yeah.
Since then, Asa Turner has come back. Meech Powell got playing time at defensive back. He'll be presumably fully healthy come Oregon State. Alex Cook and Cameron Fabiculainen, both continuing to get more and more healthy. And then the real interesting wild card, and I don't have any insider information on this, but most people were expecting that Edifuon Ulofosio, middle linebacker for the Huskies, would be back by the beginning of November. So if he can step back into that rotation with Cam Bright, who, to be honest, has struggled at times this season, and with Carson Bruner and with Alfonso Tupitalu, who's had a really nice season, and Chris Mole, the transfer, who seems to be really beginning to find his place on this team and understand how this defense is best suited for his strengths. That's a major addition to this team. Ulofosio graded out 2 years in a row as the highest graded linebacker in the Pac-12. So if he can come in and step into at least a partial playing role to help supplement and bring some stability and some leadership into that spot, that could be a major, major addition for the squad heading into really, I would say, arguably the toughest 3 out of 4 game stretch over of the season.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about the schedule that Washington's got here, where I think coming out of that Arizona State game, because of just the depletion of resources in the secondary, there was kind of some concern about, how quickly certain guys are going to come back and how glaring this issue is. And then kind of looking at how the schedule has played out, if you needed to buy yourself a month before you played a team like Oregon, this is kind of how you would script it, is you play an Arizona team that isn't really capable of slowing down Washington's offense at all.
Yeah.
And then you play a Cal team that isn't really capable of testing that secondary downfield in the way that most teams in the Pac-12 are. Cal just doesn't have that in their arsenal. Then you get a bye to kind of rest up. And then you get a home game with the crowd energy against a good Oregon State team, but an Oregon State team that tends to win with physicality. They're not necessarily a team that's going to be, you know, throwing 40 and 50 yard lasers, you know, all over the field. Right. Like they're going to ground and pound it a little bit, you know? And so this is kind of, I think, of a favorable stretch in that it does give Washington a chance to kind of figure some things out on the fly. And it seems like they're doing that. It seems like, you know, they've kind of stitched things together in the back end there for the most part. And, you know, if they can get some guys healthy now over the next 2 weeks, that this team, you know, might still be pretty formidable.
Yeah. And it just, it makes that loss to Arizona State all the more painful, knowing where we're at now and knowing what could be ahead of us if things, you know, kind of come together our way. But like you said, at the end of the day, if we go into the week against Oregon 7-2, I think most Husky fans would have taken that before the season. And we haven't won in Tempe since 2001. So, I mean, this was obviously the year that we could have and should have done it, but it's not like that's been a gimme game every year that we dropped. You know, that's always a tough game for whatever reason. But I think, yeah, going into the bye, getting healthy, you know, having a great game script for the Oregon State game. You know, normally they script out the first series. Maybe they take time to script out, you know, two series, the first of the first half, the first of the second half, whatever that might be. But take advantage of that extra time, self-scout, and then really let's finish the season strong.
Yeah.
So what about the Ducks? Look, you know, I'm trying to remember, who are they playing this weekend?
They've got the Cal Bears, who, okay. You know, Washington just gave us the blueprint. So,
yeah. So, I mean, there's not a lot of intrigue there, but any, you know, thoughts and any concerns, or are you feeling like this is a slam dunk?
No, I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk. For one thing, the last 2 years, this game has been really close. I mentioned last year, Oregon at Autzen, they needed a goal line stand in the final possession to beat Cal. That was the game famously where Autzen started booing, and it was not clear whether they were booing the coaching staff or booing the quarterback. And, mm-hmm. and Mario Cristobal kind of got on him the next week about it, about how kind of classless that was. And then the year before, 2020, the pandemic year, Oregon lost at Cal 21-17, didn't score in the second half of that game. So kind of similar to what we've talked about with Washington and Cal, is Oregon does have this recent history of these low scoring games. You know, Justin Wilcox, mm-hmm. as a defensive minded coach, that's one thing that he's been able to do pretty well in his tenure at Cal, is put together formidable defenses. And I think there's also some history here, Warren, where, you know, I mentioned the kind of the challenge of going undefeated in conference play. The only Oregon team to run the table in the regular season was the 2010 team. And that team's toughest game was against a very normal Cal team that Oregon had to pull out a 15-13 win. The game swung on a punt return by Cliff Harris. The offense was totally handcuffed all game long. And so, you know, you can't take these games for granted. You know, I think we kind of took that Arizona State game for granted a little bit for the Huskies, and look what happened. I think we both still are probably going to take Colorado for granted. It's hard not to.
Yeah.
But Cal took Colorado for granted and got beat. So
right.
So I think, you know, I'll feel better if I see Oregon just put together a really strong first quarter. You know, I tend to feel like after the first quarter, so I can kind of sense where the trajectory of the game is going. But if Oregon comes out and gets an uncharacteristic three and out and then follows that up with a turnover and all of a sudden they're down 14-0, I'll start pacing around.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, the Huskies will be taking the weekend off. So I probably will be taking the weekend off from watching football as well. In fact, I'm actually going out of town this weekend with my beautiful bride. So I will not be catching up on all that till probably Monday of next week. But Mark, let's skip ahead and talk a little bit about the game week of the Husky versus Ducks. You know, this is a unique experience because you and I, along with a handful of other dudes, are going to be heading down to the game. And, you know, we've chatted about this a little bit offline, but I think for this being the Dog and Duck Show, it seems to me like we may have to do two podcasts that
week. Yeah. Yeah. Like a before and after, is that kind of what you're thinking?
That's what I'm thinking. And I'm thinking, you know, we've got, so maybe just kind of give a little breakdown of the demographics of Dog and Duck, of this group that's going to be getting together for, you know, the game in Autzen in 2 weekends.
Yeah. So there are going to be six of us, I believe. There'll be six of us attending the game, five of us staying in the same house. And the breakdown of those six is there are three Husky fans and three Duck fans. And so now the Husky guys have been on the pod before. We've had our friends JJ and Jake on this podcast mm-hmm. at different times. So faithful listeners might remember their names. But with those two guys in particular, I think I've attended every Oregon-Washington game since 2017. You know, I think going back to like the Willie Taggart era. We've been doing this now as an annual tradition that has just kind of grown in terms of how many people have participated and everything like that. And so this is the first year, though, that there's an equal proportion of Duck to Huskies. You know, it started out, I was the lone Duck, and then another Duck came on, and now we've got an even ratio. So so that creates a little different dynamic in the house for sure.
Yeah, so I'm going to propose that what we do for that week, and we'll have to work out the details and make sure we get everybody on board, but I'm going to propose that week before the game, we have all six guys on there. We have a panel discussion about the game, make our predictions, and then if we can get everybody to, you know, calm themselves down enough to compose themselves to join us for a recap of the game, we'll have a panel where we'll talk about what happened out there in Austin. That should be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for the.
So are you thinking we record the panel, but then we save the recording until after the game? And so it's not like we're dropping it before the game. It's we're hanging on to it, and then people after the game can listen kind of the predictions ahead of time to see how right we were.
That's a unique idea. I was actually thinking that we could, you know, because I think we're heading down on Thursday. So
two separate pods.
I was thinking two separate pods, just like 35 minutes pregame and then 35 minutes on Saturday evening post-game. Okay. And you know, just let emotions kind of run amok on there and see what happens.
Well, that could be very interesting. I know that if it is not a favorable outcome for the Ducks, it will be very hard for me to compose myself for a podcast immediately following, but I would do it for the, you know, for the listeners. Absolutely.
Well, hopefully you'll handle things better than Davante Adams leaving the stadium, and you know there won't be video of you pushing JJ down the stairs on the way to the restroom.
Yeah.
Well, we'll save more conversation for that at a later date. Let's wrap things up. Mark, any final thoughts?
No, I'm. Once again, Warren, the week following a big victory is just kind of this euphoria that just kind of sets in. And so I can't tell you how many times I've texted buddies or looked back at the highlights or just kind of savored in the afterglow of this win over UCLA. But it's a great feeling, and yet we gotta get ready for the Cal Bears. Gotta turn the page.
That's right. Well, hey, one other piece of dog news I forgot to mention. Huskies today signed a 2024 quarterback recruit, local kid named EJ Kaminong, a three-star kid, but sounds like he really wanted to be a Husky. And man, if you're a local kid playing quarterback, why would you want to go anywhere else as long as Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb are calling the plays? Because this is a quarterback's dream scenario. But good news for the Dogs. And we'll keep you guys tuned in to everything else happening dog and duck news in the days ahead. But with that, for all my dog fans, go Dogs.
And for all my duck fans, go Ducks.
We'll catch you next time.